So it's a pleasure to be able to give this talk. So actually, I'm especially grateful because this work has been languishing on my advisor's desk for over a year. But actually, when he found out I was giving this talk, he got excited, and now it's actually going to come out in a few days. It's a pleasure to introduce my collaborators, Nicola Regnault. He's in Princeton. Chen Fang is also in Princeton, but he's moving. Oh, sorry, he was in Princeton. They moved to MIT now. Met you in UIUC. So, what are parafermions? We start with fermions as some microscopic constituents, but at low energies, we can realize these parafermions as emergent degrees of freedom. I'm going to refer to Zn parafermions as labeling the algebra, right? So the Zn algebra is, when you take a parafermion operator and you raise it to the power of n, you get 1. Here, j is the subscript j is a spatial index. When you take gamma dagger, you get gamma to the n minus 1. So it's now known that in one dimension, there's a distinct phase for every integer division of n. So actually, for example, if n equals 4, there'll be 3 divisions. So there'll be 3 distinct phases. So actually, this might raise some alarm bells, but because we know that in a truly one-dimensional fermions have a Z2 classification. Okay, so really these parafermions, they have an anomalous origin, which is to say that they can only be realized as along the edge of some two-dimensional system with topological order. And I mean, there's so many proposals to realize parafermions now. I'm just gonna just mention one of them. For example, this one by Meng Cheng. If you start with a fractional topological insulator, and you fill it, the filling is being 1/m. So you have some gapless helical Luttinger liquid on its edge, and there are 2 ways to gap it, one by a superconductor and one by a ferromagnet, say. And on the domain wall of such a, I mean, on this domain wall, you'll trap a Z to the 2m parafermion, okay? Yes?
Sorry, I've got a little lost right here. So, was that like a contradiction between the two things you were saying, or like a apparent one? Because you were saying like, that there's some work that shows that there's a distinct phase for every division of n, but then
Then
the statement about fermions is somehow in contradiction with that? Is that what you're saying?
Right, because this parafermions, you have to understand what is the microscopic constituents, right? You start with a fermionic system. And these are emergent degrees of freedom at low energies. But even though they're emergent, like if you know that fermions have a Z2 classification, so anything that's emergent, like this really, I mean, I'd say this is a,
yeah. Right. I was thinking it was no problem because I was thinking n equals 2 is like my fermion.
Oh, n equals 2, there's no problem with n equals 2.
Yeah,
exactly, there's no problem with n equals 2. That's a problem with n greater than 2.
Okay, so you're just saying if we have the Zn ones, but we somehow want to think of them as coming in from fermions. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so at first the title of the slide was what is topological order, but I realized that'd be too contentious. So I'm just going to tell you about what I think is topological order for this parafermions. And so one common theme is that the ground state degeneracy depends on the topology of the space. For this Zn parafermions, if you put it on an open chain, you'll have an n-fold degenerate ground state, but on a closed chain, the degeneracy is lifted. So I mean, we can say more. This n-fold degenerate ground state space is really immune to spatially local perturbations. I'm going to make that statement very precise. Another property is that on a closed chain, you're really sensitive to changes in to differences in the closed boundary conditions. But actually, we can sort of unify all these concepts together by sort of introducing so-called zero edge modes. And really, zero edge modes, it's not an unfamiliar concept. I mean, it's the so-called dangling Marinov fermion that is that has been experimentally realized, we hope. But actually, so we want to, I guess part of this work is sort of a very precise construction. We know how to analytically and numerically construct these edge modes. Also, we are proposing that these edge modes, we are applying them to formulate a new type of twisted boundary conditions on a closed chain. And
so is the chain be realized as a standalone system?
Oh no, for the point is
or
for
is the boundary or
Yes, yes, yes. At least for Zn greater than 2, it's always the boundary or something. That's right. Right, so we don't just have topologically ordered systems. So actually, I'm going to tell you about parafermionic phases which have no Majorana analog. Some of them are symmetry breaking, but symmetry breaking in a way that's not conventional symmetry breaking. You'll have what happens is a sort of a parafermion condensate which has a non-local order parameter. So I'm going to tell you something about this parafermion condensates. They sort of generalize Cooper pairing, and they're in a sense more robust than even topological phases, and they're more robust in a sense that I will make precise as we go on. Okay. So just to finish my introduction of the this Zn parafermions, this is the complete algebra, right? So now what happens is if I take two parafermion operators on different spatial sites and I permute this operator, so I pick up a phase factor which depends on the relative position of the two parafermions. And of course, this omega is just the nth root of 1. And this is the simplest some kind of parafermionic model that is topologically ordered. It's just the dimerized Kitaev model, right? And just schematically, I'm going to denote this as like two parafermions. And you always have multiples of 2 because every time you introduce a domain wall, say on the edge of a fractional topological integer, you always introduce 2 domain walls at once, right? So there's always 2 at a time. And this kind of coupling you can think about as coupling the parafermion here to the parafermion here. And this schematically is, I'm going to use this as a schematic for this kind of coupling. So I just get the operator at 2j and the operator at 2j plus 1. Okay. So for this parafermionic systems, there'll be a Zn symmetry, which the generator I'll call Q. And actually, the Zn symmetry is a sort of easy to understand. If you go back to this, for example, this here, we know that any physical perturbation couples to the electron operator, right? And here on the edge of this fractional topological insulator, the electron fractionalizes into m quasi-particles. Then we know that we have a superconductor. So that means fermion parity is conserved, which means that the number of quasi-particles is conserved modulo 2m, right? 2m here is just big N. Right? So we have a emergent Zn symmetry, which is represented by this operator. It's just a generalization of the fermion parity for Majorana systems. Like Q to the N is identity. So then the idea is that we can, so I'll introduce a notion of a Zn charge of an operator. If I take the lowering operator, this is the lowering operator, and I conjugate it by Q, I get a negative unit charge. Yeah, I'm going to call this negative unit charge if it picks up this phase factor. So a raising operator has positive unit charge, and some operator like that is charge neutral. And I'm also going to refer to a Zn charge of a state. Since all our Hamiltonians commute with the Zn generator, so all our eigenstates we can label by a charge that takes on n values. Okay, so what are the zero edge modes, right? So this is, for this dimerized Hamiltonians, it's very simple, right? We have a dangling parafermion on the edge. It commutes with the entire Hamiltonian. So this dangling operator is also charged. So what happens is that you can, if this really implies an n-fold degenerate ground state. And also, even your excited states are n-fold degenerate, in the sense that if I apply gamma 1 to one of the states there, and I take it to a state that's degenerate energy, but with a different charge, in a different charge sector, this is the case with Z3. If I apply it 3 times, of course, I come back to itself. So this sort of zero edge modes in this very simple kind of model Hamiltonians, I mean, this model Hamiltonians do not just have pedagogical value. It's really a good starting point to consider. Like, the question is this: if I knew the zero edge modes here, in this space of Hamiltonians, what is the zero edge modes if I move away from it? So that is one question we'll answer, right? So to make that statement more precise, I'm going to start with some dimerized Hamiltonian, and I'm going to deform it. I'm going to introduce S as my deformation parameter, And the point is that as a function of S, I'm just going to assume that there's a gap, right? There's a gap that separates the low energy manifold with some between the low energy manifold and the excited states. So that's all I'm going to assume. So then if I denote this low energy manifold by the projection to this as a PS, then the one goal is to find a local unitary that transforms P0 to PS. Okay. So once we find this local unitary, this is the way to construct this edge modes, right? The point is that this gamma 1, which applied in the dimerized limit, you conjugate it by this local unitary. Now we find is that they don't commute to the Hamiltonian, but they commute to the projected Hamiltonian. The Hamiltonian projected to the low energy subspace. Of course, so the fact that this is a local unitary implies that this edge mode will spread a bit, but it's still localized because it's we're going to construct US to be a locality preserving. Okay, so the technique we're going to use is a quasi-adiabatic continuation. So it's a technique introduced by Hastings and Xiaogang with application of Leib-Robinson techniques, like Leib-Robinson concepts like the speed of light in quantum systems. So actually, but actually it's quite simple. It's like, in a sense, the techniques that are most obvious is really forms the bread and butter of all the physicists' work, right? So maybe what is the bread of a physicist, if I may get your opinion?
Two by two matrix.
That's true. I'll give you the first one. It's perturbation theory. What's the butter of a physicist? Okay, it's Fourier transforms, and we're gonna see that, right? So the idea is that we have a unique local unitary, and the question is what is the Hamiltonian that realizes this local unitary, and this is what I claim the Hamiltonian is. This is work done by Hastings, but the point is you have this deformation part of your Hamiltonian, and you time evolve it by HS. But let's just focus on this Hamiltonian without this part first here, this function f. If I didn't have this, so I have something local here and I time evolve it to infinity, it's going to be generically non-local, right? So what happens is that this filter function here, I'm going to call it a filter function because the point is that it filters out the time evolution at large times. So really you just need that this f decays rapidly for large times. And of course the success of this filtration depends on delta s. Here delta s, if you recall, is a gap. It's a gap above the low energy states. So if when delta s goes to zero, you're going to have a harder and harder time filtering out the large time evolution. So it's just saying that it's really impossible to get any local unitaries when the gap goes to zero. And that's because there's a mobility gap. So that's a separate issue. So one thing, since actually the filter function is going to play some part in my talk, so I'm going to mention a few more details about this filter function. So what happens is that I'm going to insist that the Fourier transform of this filter function is like minus 1 over omega for omega greater than 1. So actually this really leads to the fact that this really leads to this, that the time, so you sort of evolve P0 to PS, this actually leads to this. So what happens is, so this filter function, this part is fixed by this condition. But then I haven't mentioned what's going on here. What's going on here is that this part of the filter function is really optimized such that f decays as rapidly as you get, which means that ds is as maximally local as you get. Okay, so this part of the region is optimized for that. And I just want to give a sketch of like why I mentioned this bread and butter thing, right? Because how do we get this relation from this? I label the instantaneous eigenstates of HS by some sub by a, by a, some some index j. If I consider the matrix elements between a ground and an excited state, right? So then I sandwich this by j and k. Of course, this it just picks up the energy difference between ek minus ej. But then if these are states separated by the gap, of course, then you just apply the Fourier transform, and this becomes like 1 over the energy difference. So of course, you just realize this is the matrix elements in perturbation theory. So this is your bread and your butter, right? So it's not, I mean, I didn't show like completely like how you get from here to here, but it's a few steps, and it's quite easy, okay? Okay, so just want to give you some intuition of how you apply this quasi-adiabatic continuation. So it's always easy. Let's give a really simple example. I'll give you some feeling about it. So I'm going to start with the Kitaev-Marana model, and I'm going to frustrate it. So this is the Kitaev part, which is coupled in black here, and I'm going to frustrate it with some couplings which couple this Marana operators, right? This coupling here, and I'm going to sum over J, right? That's implicit. And the goal is to construct this edge mode that spreads. I'm just going to do it to first order in S. I'm going to expand this to first order in S and just get a commutator of gamma 1 with D0, right? And so the goal is to construct this. Now gamma 1, so gamma 1 commutes with H0. So really, you really have to consider the commutator of gamma 1 with the deformation V. So the deformation V consists of like gamma 1 and gamma 2, right? So that's the only term that contributes. So this commutator is just gamma 2. And the next step is just to identify the normal modes, the normal modes of H0, right? What are the eigen operators under commutation by H0, which turns out to be very simple, right? It's just some linear combination of gamma 2 and gamma 3. But we know that gamma 2 is some linear combination of these two normal modes. So we just expand it in the normal modes, right? So when you do this expansion, this operator here just becomes a phase vector because these are normal modes. Right? Now, once again, we just do this Fourier transform, right? So we Fourier transform this. This picks up a minus 1 because recall the Fourier transform is minus 1 over the frequency, right? And this picks up a plus 1. So now the gamma 2 is canceled, and what's left is gamma 3. So what did we show? We showed that the spread, when you continue this edge mode, the spread goes like gamma 1 plus s gamma 3. Okay, so it just spreads. Okay, so just to give you some feeling about it. So I'd like to make a comparison with some seminal work by Fenley, gave us many reasons to believe that these parafermionic chains are sort of topologically robust. And the way he did it is by constructing edge modes actually that commute with the entire Hamiltonian. Okay. And I just want to give you like a sort of a flavor of how he does it. So with the same Hamiltonian, like how would he do it? He would say, let me just write I'm going to call it the Fenley edge modes to distinguish between his edge modes and mine. And it's gamma 1. I'm just going to find delta as some deformation of gamma 1. Then I consider the commutator of this Fenley edge mode to the Hamiltonian. So clearly, gamma 1 commutes with the dimer part. So there's only the only non-trivial part is this commutator with V. Now delta, to order S square, sorry, to first order an S, you only need to worry about the commutator of delta with the dimerized Hamiltonian, okay? And the idea is you just want these two terms to cancel. So we already told you what the commutator of V of gamma 1 is. It's just gamma 2. And what's needed here is we want something to cancel with gamma 2, and we know that dimerized Hamiltonian has a term gamma 2, gamma 3, so we just need this delta to be gamma 3. Okay, so it's just, and you can really just do this procedure iteratively, and you find okay that its edge modes also agree with ours, and they spread like that. But clearly the way that he did it implies a stronger constraint than the way that I did it, because it's by construction he made it commute the entire Hamiltonian, Well, ours, we by construction commute to the projected Hamiltonian. So I guess to add salt to the injury, what I found is that for any quadratic Marana Hamiltonian, our edge nodes will always commute to the Hamiltonian to first order at least. And there's some hints that for even interacting Marana models, there's a work by Kells recently that claims that a Fenley type edge mode also exists. So, I mean, I'm not sure if I actually believe this, but there's a claim out there. So then what did we actually gain with our edge mode construction? And probably with Marana's, I could probably say maybe nothing. But actually, that's the point of this the point of this Zn parafermions when n is not 2, okay? When n is not 2, something interesting happens. Right, when n is not 2, you actually have this, the level of the Kitaev model, you have this extra phase degree of freedom, e to the I phi, which parameterizes this coupling here, which we didn't have with Marana's. With Marana's, well, it's just that phase factor had to be imaginary just by just to make the Hamiltonian Hermitian. So this extra degree of freedom, like when phi is not equal to 0, so actually it breaks time reversal and spatial inversion symmetries in this model. Those models are called chiral for that reason. So this is something Fenley did. So he just, that same procedure which I described last slide, a bit more complicated than that, but it's essentially the same thing, and he constructed this, his Fenley edge modes. And it's quite complicated. All I want you to take from this is that this coefficient here diverges as phi goes to 0. Okay. So you could really interpret that as the edge mode delocalizing as phi goes to 0. In fact, actually, when he observed this, Fenley made some statement here. Well, since phi goes to 0 is precisely the limit where you restore time reversal and spatial inversion symmetry. So he thought that maybe this discrete symmetries have something to do with the topological order. He said, breaking or including this discrete symmetries can change the type of topological order or eliminate it altogether. So I actually disagreed with the statement, and it sort of motivated a lot of my work here. So this is what our edge modes can do. Okay. So this is our edge modes for when phi equals 0. So you see it's the first part is just gamma 1 as usual, but this part, very different from his. But first, I want to say that it's perfectly localized. It doesn't delocalize when phi equals 0. There's nothing singular about this. And also, one thing that's nice about parafermions is that it's really, you can see that it's a genuine many-body excitation. There are like terms like gamma 1 dagger, gamma 2, gamma 3 here. But it's many-body, but you might think, well, it's many-body, but we started with a quadratic Hamiltonian, right? But that's actually the thing about parafermions when n is greater than 2. You have this non-trivial commutation relation. So there's really no such thing as a free parafermion. The situation has been described like that. I like to describe it as, like in life, there's no free cake. You don't get to eat free cake. And so here, even for this quadratic Hamiltonians, we have something non-trivial. So here, our edge node, right, permutes the ground states, but not the excited states, right? So this is what we can do with our edge modes. Yep?
There's some feeling for this parafermion.
Right.
Is it possible to write it in terms of complex fermions?
It's
like
not.
The way you do Meyer and
Appermion. It's not possible. It's not possible. Yeah.
So no oscillators will represent.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You can write in terms of clock variables.
Yeah, we'll go to the clock representation. Sure. Are there any other questions? Okay. Yeah. So, just to summarize, like his edge mode really has worse spatial localization. Our edge mode is maximally localized. His commits to the Hamiltonian, the entire Hamiltonian. Ours commits to the projected Hamiltonian. So actually, there's actually a nice trade-off between spatial localization and commutivity of the Hamiltonian. So actually, we can make this statement very precise. What I found is that actually both edge modes, you can think of them as having the same functional form, but with different filter functions. Okay, so what I mean by that is recall that this when you sandwich gamma one when you conjugate gamma one with this quasi-adiabatic continuation, really, this quasi-adiabatic continuation functionally depends on this filter function. But you can, you know, it doesn't. This filter function didn't have to be the one that I told you about. If you deform that filter function, you can get so-called this friendly type edge modes. So remember what I told you was that this part was minus 1 over omega. And I told you that between 1 and minus 1, this part is optimized in blue to ensure that this is maximally locality preserving. That's the case for this side. But really, what Fenley essentially did, but he didn't say it like that, but this is what I found, is that you can actually essentially deform your filter function such that it becomes closer and closer to minus 1 over omega, even in this region. When you deform it, it becomes it just commutes with the Hamiltonian even more, in a sense. And but if you consider a limit when phi equals 0, you basically have to deform it such that it becomes minus 1 over omega, even up to omega equals 0. So it's completely singular. Your filter function is completely singular, which is really saying that your filter function is not doing any job in filtering out anything. But that's why this edge mode delocalizes when phi equals 0. Okay. Yeah?
So in your construction, you don't have degeneracies at excited levels anymore.
That's right. Yeah.
So is it like a weak 0 mode or something? Is that the right language?
I don't like that term, but you could say that, yeah. I mean, there's a recent review by Fenley. He calls it weak zero modes. I don't like it, but okay, fine. Yeah. Any other questions? So I'm going to stop talking about Fenley-type edge modes, so I'm just going to cut some notation, and So our edge modes, I'm just going to denote by capital gamma L and capital gamma R on the right edge. But the nice thing about this one application of this edge modes is if I just take the product of gamma L with gamma R, I call it Q tilde. So actually Q tilde forms a representation of Zn generator in a ground state space. So I haven't proven that. I'm going to show that. But why is this? I'm just going to tell you why I think it's interesting. One thing, it's a fractionalized representation of a symmetry operator. The notion that a symmetry, when I say fractionalized here, I mean that initially you had a symmetry operator that, some on-site symmetry operator it operates on all sites, right? But now this is fractionalized in the sense that it only has a support on the left and on the right edge. So that's this notion that is kind of fundamental to, for example, constructing 1D SPTs. I mean, the classification of 1D SPTs, for example. But actually, we now have a sort of a rigorous way to do this sort of fractionalization. I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm overstepping myself, but I haven't really seen any rigorous way of, there are a lot of arguments about how it fractionalizes, but I haven't seen anything rigorous yet. But also this, with Q tilde and this edge modes, you form a non-commutative algebra in the ground state space. For n equals 2, this is the familiar Clifford algebra. And so I'm gonna also use Q. One useful interpretation of Q is an inter-edge coupling, which I'll show you that actually it produces very ideal Hamiltonians on a closed chain. And I'll tell you what I mean by ideal. So the way to show that, I'm going to show you that Q tilde is it does form a ground state representation of the Zn generator. So the best way to do it, I was advised, the fermion is best thought of as an object of a tail, so a tail of clock operators. We're going to do a generalized Jordan-Wigner transformation. So for Z3 fermions, we're going to rewrite it in terms of clock operators sigma and tau. Sigma just tells the time, and tau just turns the clock, right? And sigma and tau are related. The algebra has this form. Okay, and here, clearly, sigma cubed is 1, and tau cubed is 1. Okay. And the way to do this transformation is you have a parafermion operator, and you write it as a head and a tail. The head is a sigma j, and you have a string of taus. Okay? And for the second type of parafermion operator, you write it as a so a different head and a string of taus. Here I denote blue because a different head because it's just an extra factor of tau. But the point is now that every head, when you bring it across a tail, picks up a phase vector omega, a red head and a blue head, when you interchange it, also picks up a phase vector omega, right? So that's why you recover this non-trivial parafermionic commutation relation. See, because if I apply one first, if I change the order, right, then I have to bring this head across this tail. When I bring this head across this tail, I pick up this phase vector omega, which is this phase vector, right? In this representation, the Zn generator, which is just a string of tiles, it's just a tail that covers the entire chain. Okay. So in this representation, actually, so it's well known that topological order in the parafermionic language just becomes conventional order in the clock language. So if you just rewrite, for example, the dimerized Hamiltonian, this Kataev limit, it just becomes a ferromagnetic clock model. I'm just going to label the ground states of this ferromagnetic clock model by alpha. So these are fully polarized states, and which are eigenstates of sigma j. Well, so if sigma j acts on this, picks up omega to the alpha, and this q just sort of turns the clock, right? It just flips you from one polarized state to another. Okay. And there'll be, of course, n states of this, which explains the n-fold degeneracy, right? And the claim is this, right? So this is what I'm trying to show, that this q tilde, which you just take as a product of the edge modes on the left and the right, just has the same matrix elements in this ground state basis as q, right? Because in this case, in the dimerized limit, the edge mode is just gamma 1 and gamma 2L. If you just rewrite it in terms of clocks, gamma 1 is sigma 1, and gamma 2L is sigma L times a string. But clearly, this sigma 1 dagger and sigma L produces canceling phase vectors because of this relation. So it just tells you that Q tilde and Q really have the same matrix elements in the ground state basis, in the ground state space. Right? But then once we deform it, so now we consider deforming this ferromagnetic clock model with some deformation. So I mean, this quasi-adiabatic continuation is just designed to preserve the matrix elements in the ground state space, right? So we have if I now denote Q tilde S as the continuation of Q tilde at zero, this just produces the edge modes, gamma L and gamma R. So it's just by construction, it has the same matrix elements as what we had here, which is really saying that Q tilde is forms a representation of Q, even in this deformed basis. Okay. So I think it's time to revisit the question, like, what is the relation between ground state degeneracy and the spatial topology? So when you have an open chain, you have this edge modes that so generate a non-commutative algebra in the ground state space. So really, if I denote for Z3 parafermions, there are three ground states which I can denote by an eigenvalue of Q tilde. And this applying gamma L just takes you from one state to the other, right? If I have a closed chain, so what happens is that if I have a closed chain, just the existence of this edge modes imply that I can close the chain by this Q tilde, right? When I close it by this Q tilde, really you can think of it as I have an edge mode on this side and an edge mode on this side. I'm just gonna kind of form a giant dimer. So it's a dimer, but it's kind of spread out a bit, but it's still a dimer. And I can think of it as forming a dimer here. And this is this dimer term here. So clearly this, if I close the chain like this, I think this is a very natural way to close it. What happens is it picks out the ground state with eigenvalue zero. So right, so if I had three states, now it picks out this state as the non-degenerate ground state. Right? And really, you can really nicely think of this as some kind of topological order parameter. I say that in analogy with really conventional symmetry breaking systems. In conventional symmetry breaking systems, you have some local order parameter, which actually breaks the symmetry, but you apply it and you also pick out some state in your symmetry broken manifold. But here, our topological order parameter preserves the symmetry, but it's actually non-local in the sense that if you write it in terms of clocks, right? Recall that if you write it in terms of clocks, it's actually as a string. So it's non-local and symmetry preserving, but it still picks out a state in your topological manifold. But so clearly there are actually multiple ways to close the chain. I only showed you one way, but clearly you can add some twist parameter here, omega to the alpha, and by twisting it, this is what I'm going to call twisting the boundary conditions. If you just if actual twist parameter, it's analogous to flux insertion, right? So if you twist the if you twist alpha, you pick out a different you pick out a ground state of a different charge. So this really is a one signature of a topological order in a closed chain. You really permute the ground state charge when you twist the boundary condition. So this is what we're claiming is a really a nice ideal Hamiltonian. And to motivate it in a slightly different way, suppose you ask a question like this. You start with an open chain Hamiltonian. And you ask, what is the, you start with an open chain Hamiltonian that's topological. You have some topological manifold of ground states. And you would like to formulate what is the closed chain Hamiltonian that is exactly minimized by a state in your open chain manifold. So the answer to that question is just this Hamiltonian. Well, what happens is that an open chain ground state minimizes this and also minimizes the open chain Hamiltonian. So it minimizes both terms separately. So you're sort of designing a closed chain Hamiltonian that minimizes that is minimized by the open chain ground state. Okay, so that's another way to sort of motivate this kind of closed chain Hamiltonians. Okay. So just want to emphasize that what we are proposing is actually different from the traditional ways to close the chain. So I mean, what is the simplest way? The usual way is suppose you have an open chain which is translationally invariant up to boundary terms, right? Up to terms on the edge. What you do is you just translate a bulk term to the edge, and then you just add phase vectors, which correspond to a different flux insertion, right? And since this Hamiltonian is translationally invariant modulo this phase vectors, I'm going to refer to it as translationally invariant boundary conditions. So I just mentioned that this charge permutation as a property on a closed chain is proven by us for our sort of edge mode kind of boundary condition, but for at least as far as I know, it remains a conjecture for this translationally invariant boundary conditions. Okay. And just to give you some to show you some comparative analysis, I mean, let's do a simple model, this XYZ Mariner model. So I'm going to use this model to compare the two different types of boundary conditions. So this XYZ Mariner model is sort of well understood analytically. Like, suppose if I only had this term, this is the Kitaev kind of this is the Kitaev Hamiltonian, right? But now I have a competing quadratic term, I have a competing density-density interaction, and if you know something about this Mariner model, it's So the phase diagram is really well understood. For example, at when Gx and Jy equals 0 right here, this is the Kitaev limit, this topological. But we know that the phase diagram, the gap maintains open in exactly a square of bounded by Gx less than 1 and Jy less than 1. And in this square, it's exactly a square. This region here is topological. Okay. So this is I'm showing you the open chain spectral gap.
Okay.
Z2. Yeah, Mariner.
Oh.
And okay, so what do the for this Mariner model? What do the closed chain boundary terms look like? You're just translating terms. You're translating bulk terms to the edge. They introduce these phase vectors. So it looks pretty much like your bulk terms. Let me show you what if our edge mode boundary conditions look like. It looks nothing like your bulk terms. Maybe this term looks like a bulk term, but you see here that this for example, this looks nothing like your what do you expect from the bulk? But let's compare this. Okay, so maybe I should emphasize that point that when I say it looks nothing like it, I'm saying that our edge mode boundary condition really Even if you started with something that has translation invariance, you will break translation invariance, right? This edge mode kind of boundary conditions. Now, so I'm going to compare these two types of boundary conditions. And my criterion for comparison is how sensitive it is to twisting the boundary conditions. So here I've shown the plot. So white denotes where the ground state charge changes. So now I'm saying that the parity of the ground state just changes when I twist the boundary conditions. And black corresponds to when it does not change. So you have to recall that this whole square should be topological. But if you know something about the XYZ model, there's this region here actually that where really quantum fluctuations are dominant. And really where quantum fluctuations are dominant, it seems like this translationally invariant boundary condition fails to really capture this twisting. I'm saying that here you're really insensitive to your boundary conditions, when really I think you should be. But if you compare it to our edge mode boundary condition, even where the quantum fluctuations are dominant, it seems like we're still quite sensitive to the boundary conditions. Okay. Okay. So I just quickly mentioned that that was for Z2 parafermions or Mariners. For Z3, we can also, of course, produce phase diagrams. So recall for Z3, we can parameterize this coupling by this phase phi, and also this deformation parameter S parameterizes the strength of this coupling here. And so this, for example, this is the phase diagram that we can get. If the white region tells you where when you twist the boundary conditions, now you have three possible twists for Z3 parafermions. So it's possible that the ground state charge changes three times, right? So white tells you when it changes three times, gray tells you when it changes twice, and black tells you when it doesn't change at all. So really, this is really telling you that this whole region here is a topological. It actually agrees, this phase diagram agrees quite nicely with recent work by Ye Chuang, and I mean, Taylor Hughes is in there somewhere. Agreement with an entanglement analysis is a different way to approach it. Okay, so far I've actually shown you that that we have this edge operators that permute the different ground states. I actually never showed you that the ground states are degenerate. I'm actually going to show you a stronger statement is that the ground states are actually immune to any spatially local perturbations. Right? And there's a really simple way to formulate it. If I have some operator that is local and charge neutral, any operator that's local and charge neutral, then I sandwich it by this topological kind of this topological manifold, I just get the projection with some constant. Okay? This constant will depend, of course, on O. So this is really a statement that you cannot distinguish your ground states by any local and neutral perturbations. Of course, I say this is a stronger statement than the ground state degeneracy because if I just take O to be the Hamiltonian is itself local and charge neutral. So then I just get that this C here is just the ground state energy, right? So once we prove this, it just follows automatically that this is true. And the way that we're going to show it, the way that we're going to show it is first we're going to show in the dimerized case that this relation is true. Like in the dimerized limit, we want to show that is true. Then we just apply our technology that we have. Now you deform it, but now we know that this deformation is related. This PS is related to P0 by its local unitary. But if you see what's happening here. Now O is sandwiched by local unitary, so this whole product must be also local and neutral. Then we just apply what we have here, that this becomes just a this becomes a constant times this should be PS. Sorry, this is a typo here. This should be PS. This is a constant times PS. Okay. So having proven this actually just follows just naturally from the quasi-adiabatic technology, right? And okay, so I'm gonna show this. This is quite easy to show, right? If I have a ferromagnetic clock model, So once again, I just labeled the fully polarized states as alpha. And in this basis, this relation is equivalent to saying that in this basis of alpha, this matrix must be proportional to some constant times identity. Okay. But that's easy to see, right? Because for one thing, if O is local, and alpha is not equal to beta, so I'm looking at the off-diagonal elements now. So clearly, if O is local, I cannot transform a fully polarized state to a different fully polarized state. So clearly, this matrix here has to be off-diagonal. It has to be diagonal, right? But then you can ask, well, why are the diagonal elements equal, right? The idea is that any neutral operator really cannot distinguish between by the expectation, they cannot distinguish between any of the polarized states. The claim is that if I sandwich O by alpha alpha is equal to O by sandwich by alpha plus 1. And really, that's simple to understand, right? Because O, if it's neutral, for one thing, O cannot contain any flipping operators tau, because that would flip alpha, and it would just basically take you out of ground state space. But it can be expressed as a product of sigmas. But now this product of sigmas, when raised to some power, so just because by neutrality, this powers, they must add up to a multiple of n. But we know how the sigma j's act on alpha. They just produce a phase factor that's omega alpha. Now omega alpha times this sum of these powers, right? But this is a multiple of n, so this is a trivial phase factor, right? So really, and this is true actually independent of alpha. This trivial phase factor is independent of alpha, right? So really, this equality holds. It's just you cannot distinguish these polarized states, right? So really, we've shown this, the top equation, and so we've shown some local indistinguishable. So we've shown that this degenerate manifold is indistinguishable. Okay. So at this point, I like to sort of refine what do you mean by local. Because when I was talking about parafermions and clocks, on an open chain, to be local on an open chain means the same thing as to be local. I mean, to be local in the parafermion representation means the same thing as locality in the clock representation. This follows just because, it follows if you have a charge, if the operators are themselves charge neutral. For example, if I have in the case of Z3, if I have a product of three parafermion operators, they're going to produce three strings that come out this way, right? But then the fact that these strings are products of taus, and tau to the cube is one in the case of Z3, then the strings just cancel. And so what happens is that you have a local parafermion term and you have a local clock term, and since every So in a sense, there's no difference in these two notions. So then what we have is that for the topological phase, we have this condition, this local indistinguishability condition, which implies a enlarged ground state degeneracy. There's also a duality with conventional order. But a lot of that actually is different when you go to a closed chain, right? So what happens is that now any neutral operator that's local in terms of parafermion operators can be clock non-local, right? So what happens is if I have a parafermion operator that sort of straddles the edges, like this is operator on site 1 and this an operator on site L, when I rewrite it in terms of clocks, I just do this Jordan-Wigner transformation, right? It has the clocks have a support over the entire chain. So if you recall, like how we showed this condition, it was the fact that local operators cannot transform you from one polarized state to another. So now if we allow this kind of terms in our Hamiltonian, clearly this does not apply, and that's really the reason why now you don't have this ground state degeneracy. You now have a non-degenerate ground state, and also so actually you can ask the question like, I mean, what is the difference between, I have this two different representations. How can I ever tell when I have something with parafermions or something with clocks, right? You can't tell on an open chain, but you can tell on a closed chain. Because now there's really no duality with conventional order. Right? Because now you can have these terms which remove the ground state degeneracy. For a clock, for a ferromagnetic clock model, when you close the chain, that's not going to remove your degeneracy because you're still only allowed clock local terms. You're only allowed clock local terms in a clock model. Right? Okay, so I'm going to tell you about. So this have a lead-in to symmetry breaking phases, which are in a sense more robust than topological phases. The idea is that now this condition actually applies on both open and closed chains. So you really have a ground state degeneracy that is independent of your spatial topology, right? So the simplest example of this, if I start with a Z4 parafermions and I symmetry break it to Z2, now it becomes a condensate with a condensate of the operator gamma square. The simplest realizations of it, like if I have a model like this, which is an open chain Hamiltonian, and I have a product of sigma square on neighboring sites, and I have a product of tau square on all sites, right? And the ground states of this are just also ferromagnetic in the sense that you're fully polarized in a combinations of 0 plus 2 and combinations of 1 plus 3. And that's easy to see because if I apply tau square to 0, 2, right? So tau square, it just flips. So every tau flips 0 to 1. So if I tau square, this flips 0 to 2. 2 gets flipped to 0. So clearly, this is invariant. And then by the same logic, this is also invariant. So what happens is that this term here projects on each side to this two basis states on each side. Then you can ask, what does this term do, right? So what this term does is that sigma square acting on 0, 2, right? So sigma acting on 0 just gets you omega to the 0, which is 1. Sigma acting on 2 gets you omega square, which is minus 1. But you square it, so it becomes 1 again. So really, sigma square acting on this gives you plus 1. And sigma square acting on 1, 3 gives you minus 1. So really, this term here just results in this ferromagnetic alignment of this basis of 0 plus 2 and 1 plus 3. Now, okay, so what we've shown is that we have this clock local order parameters tau square and sigma square on all sites. If we have it on all sites, right, it actually implies that you have a non-local order parameter, which is gamma square. Because what is gamma square? Gamma square is just when you square it up to some phase vector, it's just sigma square on that site times two powers of the string on away from it, right? But then each term in this product is already a local order parameter. This is why you have this non-local order parameter. This is why it's a parafermion condensate. Right? So actually, a lot of this condensates have been well understood in the sort of the frustration-free limit. But actually, there's a lack of quantitative understanding away from this frustration-free limit. For example, there are two groups of people who understood this, but then they would disagree on what is the correct ground state degeneracy on a closed chain. Here I told you that these are the ground states on an open chain. Suppose when you close the chain, is the ground state degeneracy lifted or not? So one group says it's lifted, one group says it's not, but so Bonnison claims it's not lifted, but he doesn't know how to prove it. So part of my work is to actually prove this, to settle this disagreement. And the way to do it is I'm going to try to prove a sort of a stronger statement about this. I mean, it looks like the same thing, but now I'm going to say that is parafermion local. But I'm also going to include clock non-local terms. So that's what I mean. Like, if I allow O to be clock non-local too, but I still insist on it being local in terms of parafermions, I get a stronger condition than what I impose for these topologically ordered systems, right? So that's a corollary. This implies that the ground state degeneracy is really independent of your spatial topology, right? So I think I'm gonna wrap up soon. So it's I'm just gonna give you a sketch of the proof, right? Because now, really, the most counterintuitive thing is that you have some ground states which are fully polarized, but now you allow operators perturbations which are also non-local. Then why? What prevents something fully polarized? Well, if this is non-local, naively you could take something that's fully polarized to something that's differently polarized, right? So I'm going to show you that this counterintuitive thing is true nevertheless if O is neutral. And let's say one simple example. If I take just gamma 1 and gamma 2L, when I express it in terms of clocks, I get this sigma 1 dagger and sigma L Q. Now Q, right, acting on 2, 4, this Q, recall, is just a flipping operator. It takes 2 to 3 and 4 to... This should be 0, 2. I guess it means the same thing. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, just, okay. So, yeah, this is really confusing. Sorry, this is 0, 2. So 0, 2, it takes 0 to 1 and 2 to 3. So this Q takes you to 1, 3. But what does sigma L do? Sigma L, it applies when you apply it to 1 plus 3, it changes the sign here, right? So there's it really takes you out of the ground state space. This operator has zero matrix elements in the ground state space. But you say, well, that's easy to rectify, right? What if I just square it? Let's just square it. And now I have sigma 1 squared, sigma L squared, and Q squared. If I square it, what happens is Q squared, acting on 2, 4 or 2, 0, remains in 2, 4. But now sigma squared and sigma 1 squared, acting on 2, 4, just gives you 2, 4. Well, OK, you have remained in the ground state space, but now you still cannot connect. It's sort of a trivial, you remain trivially in a ground state space because you still cannot connect 2, 4 and 1, 3. Okay? And actually, this is quite general. If you write any general perturbation, you have some operator that's localized, sort of clock operators that localized on the left. You have some operator that's localized on the right, some clock operators localized on the right, and then you have a string up to some power. But the point is that due to the Jordan-Wigner transformation, the powers of the sigma equal the powers of the string, right? So, but we require that these powers must be even if you want to remain in the ground state space. But the fact that these are even individually implies that the total power here is also even, which really tells you that you cannot 2-4. Basically, it tells you that if the power of Q is even, the same logic means that you really cannot connect 2-4 and 1-3. So there's really no way to gap the states, actually. So actually, this sort of intuition can be supplemented with our quasi-adiabatic technology to make this more rigorous. Like you can really show this quite rigorously with the techniques that we have. Okay. Okay. So let's wrap up. So what have we done? Like, so for topological parafermions, we've sort of analytically constructed this edge modes. Also numerically, we show that it's feasible. That in a sense, this edge modes characterize the most general topological phases, applies to chiral and non-chiral models. So we have some analytic understanding of this edge modes. Like, what is the trade-off between commutativity of the Hamiltonian and spatial localization? And really, if you want to, in a sense, you can choose your sweet spot, right? If you there's something you can do now numerically. You can really change your filter function, and depending on what you want, you can choose whatever you want. We've also constructed, in a sense, very ideal closed-chain Hamiltonians, which are very sensitive to the boundary conditions. And also, this closed-chain Hamiltonians are exactly minimized by the open-chain ground state. And then for this symmetry-breaking parafermions, we've proven them to be stable under generic parafermion local perturbations, which also includes clock non-local perturbations. So that produces the correct closed chain ground state degeneracy. So in general, like just to give you a flavor of what are all the possible phases. So I was telling you that there was a distinct phase for every integer division of n. If I denote the integer division as m times n, where m and n are integers, and I note g as the greatest common divisor of those two, really there's this phase diagram is, it goes something like this, that when g is greater than 1, there's symmetry breaking. When m is greater than g, there's topological order. And when m is greater than g is greater than 1, there's coexistence of this order. So actually, for all these phases, we know how to construct the edge modes, and we also done a lot of stability analysis with for various local perturbations. And yeah, so thank you for your attention.
So I'm wondering what you proved about this ability. I mean, I understand that you proved that the PCP is like equal to OCP, where C is some charge neutral local operator, but.
Oh, that's right. C is a constant. Right, right, yeah.
So I get that, but that doesn't necessarily imply, like, that topic does imply that the ground state degeneracy is protected, but that...
No, it does, exactly, because O can just be the Hamiltonian. Because O is satisfies all requirements. O is local and also neutral.
Well, sure, but, I agree that it's probably true, but you have these, even for, like, spins, I mean, say you have a toric code, even the stability of this guy, I mean, you can prove the same thing for a toric code.
Right.
But from that to the actual proof of stability is pretty non-trivial.
Oh, no, okay, so different notions of stability here. So I assume a spectral gap. So there's some rigorous, some people try to prove that the spectral gap is stable. And they prove it is stable under some, I mean, they have to assume something about their perturbation, but they're trying to prove the gap is stable. So that is hard. That's actually a separate question. I just assume that the gap is there. Then I ask if the gap is there, but I don't assume that the degenerate manifold, I don't assume degeneracy in the ground state space, right? So yeah, but that is a separate question. And yeah.
So you construct the edge mode as a power series of S.
Right.
So what's the radius of convergence?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I do know this series actually converge for some S.
No, that's a good question. I don't really. Yeah, I'm not 100% certain about that, so I hesitate to say. Yeah, but.
Could one use numerical test, like take the operator and do the energy apply the state the operator to the ground state and see if it's a good eigenstate or not?
Yeah, definitely this can be numerically tested. Yeah, in fact the diagrams that I showed you, the numerical analysis that I showed you, was actually just done by first order quasi-adiabatic attenuation. So in principle, you can do this. But even first order, I don't think anybody has done it at all. So the first order is already, in a sense, we did it first order because analytically we know how to derive it, and also it's a good check of our analytics. But in principle, and I think numerically, it's feasible to just do it to all orders numerically. But even this, I've never seen a paper doing it. Nobody has done this. I think it'd be interesting. And also, I also think it's interesting to generalize some of these techniques to some many body localized phase when there's no spectral gap, but there's a mobility gap. And nobody has done this either numerically.
How in experiments, what ends could be realized in an experiment?
Oh,
the things you showed there, right?
Right.
It can probably not do just any end.
Oh, right. So recall that not quite, when I introduce an N, I have to do something a little bit artificial, maybe. I guess I have to go back really far. How do I do this? Sometimes, like, well, when I think about an N, because this can only happen on the edge of some 2D system, when I think about Ns, I really think that I sort of remove this coupling to this by a really strong, I mean, a really long, say, magnetic domain or something. I mean, that's really the only way that I can. Because it's just, in a sense, this is, it relates to my original statement that it's not really a 1D thing, right? It's an edge. It has to be on an edge or something. So when I think of open boundary conditions, I'm really thinking of something like this. There are more, of course, nobody has actually found experimentally an FTI. There are more realistic proposals than this. So that's experimentally, they're more realistic proposals than that. But even that is still not yet, not something people can do yet.
From an algebra, it looks as if it is defined only in one dimension.
That's right. That's right.
So it can't define it in half dimension.
Well, no, that's a it's a good question, and people are trying to do that. In fact, Miles is trying to do that behind you. So in two dimension, there seems to be some arbitrariness in how you can imagine, like, can. Mm-hmm. Make it into a snake, but you need not have made it into a snake. You could pick a different, right? So it's a sort of different basis. I mean, you can think of it as a different basis choice, and it's at least Miles has found numerically that it doesn't seem to matter. Like, we could do it like that, like that. It doesn't seem to matter. The final result in terms of energies is the same. But he doesn't have an analytic proof that it's just a different basis choice. So I think that would be a nice advance if somebody can do that.